6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Like Bill O'Reilly.
Boom.
I'll do it live.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Well, welcome back, everybody. In Liberty and Health, we're up to 400 episodes, and returning guest who is on for episode 100, 200, 289, episode 50. I think there was one other.
How did I miss 300? Damn it.
Oh, because that was Ron Paul. So.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can boot me for Ron Paul any day, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of figured out. I there was like one other person I was thinking of for episode 300, but he never got back to me. So I was like, all right, well, fuck it. You know, Ron Paul, it's good enough.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what's going on, Tommy?
Shit, not much, man. Working a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, like everybody's freaking out about these tariffs and the announcement of the tariff deals. And as soon as that happened, like business went through the roof at McCoy's because, well, we get all our lumber locally, and Home Depot and Lowe's gets theirs shipped in from overseas. So, and our lumber was already a little bit cheaper and a better quality. So now people are really figuring it out because it's quite a bit cheaper.
Yeah. Yes, I can read this, by the way. Good to see you. You are limitless. But yeah, no, that's all. That's good stuff. I think a lot of this tariff stuff is just kind of, I don't want to say smoke and mirrors, but it's also kind of like negotiations, essentially. Like I know some of the stuff on China wasn't like, on specific things like the stuff that's in like iPhones and stuff. I saw someone saying like this wasn't applicable to some of the electronic stuff. So I don't know, man. I think people are either too pissed off or too happy about them, where I just pretty much everything that's been going on, I'm just kind of like, all right, well, we'll kind of see what happens. I think some of this might be bad, some of it might be good, but I don't assume that I know enough about anything anymore to know how something's going to play out in the future.
Well, I did my episode with Mike Meharry before Trump announced what he was planning on doing. And then I did an episode with Thomas Edlam on the tariffs as well. So the next goal is if things work out, I'm going to have a pretty big Trump supporter on my podcast that everybody's going to know about, going to know very well, that will come on and try to argue in favor of tariffs. We're in the middle of talking right now, but it's yet to be locked down. So we're working on that. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we can get that locked down and we can do a pro-Trump kind of point of view on the tariff debacle. My point of view at this, the way I look at it is all the people that hate the tariffs are the people that have been running the economy and just screwing over the middle class for the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really overly concerned with what they think. So that's kind of my point of view on it.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And you know, if you would ask me probably a couple of years ago, I probably would have spurged out and said like, oh, this is just a cost on consumers. And it still is, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, I'm more so looking at it as a way to incentivize consumption at home. But the problem, the disconnect here is that you can't necessarily use tariffs to reshore manufacturing. You can use it to incentivize consumption of product that's already available here. But a lot of the stuff that you know, we want to bring back to America isn't available here anymore. It's not because I believe Americans can learn to build these things just fine. It's just, I remember the way you put it to me once when it came to like prayer and stuff like that, like in order to speak to God, you need to prayer and flex that muscle to develop that relationship. I think that's kind of the way that like America is with manufacturing right now, where like we haven't flexed that manufacturing muscle for automotive or a lot of the stuff that we get for cars in a long time, where I think we're completely capable. It's just, that's not something that America does anymore, but we can do it. It's just going to take some time and some growing pains. And hell, maybe the tariffs are some growing pains that's necessary to bring that back.
Well, and I've often said as well, like if you were to end Social Security and just say everybody that's already eligible for Social Security or the generations before Gen X get their Social Security and Gen X just has to freaking bite the bullet and not have Social Security, I'm okay with that because I know that that pain, that suffering that I would be going through would be to make sure that my kids and my grandkids have a better future. And so you look at things like this differently when you have children. Another thing that I found interesting was when Scott Bessent was on Tucker Carlson, what was it, 2 weeks ago, I think it was, he had made a comment that, look, MIT just came out with a study and it showed that Donald Trump's 2017 tariffs only increased prices on consumers by, it was something like 0.7%. And he said the way that tariffs work is it's levied on the importer, right? So the government levies the tariff on the importer. Mm-hmm. The importer then begins negotiations with the producer. So now the producer is trying to cut down on cost in order to get the product into the country at a similar cost so that it can still compete with the goods that are already existing within the borders. And then by the time it rolls down to the consumer, it's a very minimal raise in prices. So that tax on prices is very minimal. And if you take into consideration, like, let's just say that everything that Howard Lutnick and Scott Bessent are saying comes true, right? So now there's no tax on tips, there's no tax on overtime, and there's no taxes on anybody making under $150,000 a year, period. No income taxes whatsoever. Well, what you would be paying in a tariff would be a much more voluntary tax than the income tax, because then you get to pick and choose what you buy and where that money goes, and if it's valuable to you, and if it's worth it to you to pay that tax. Right now, we have no choice with that. And when I was talking to Thomas Edlam, I brought that up to him, and he said, yes, actually, that's true. Not every product would go up in price. Some would, some would not. It depends on that particular market. Okay, well, that's fair. So then we need to look at that, and where would it least hurt the consumer? What would be most beneficial to the country? And that's what we really need to look at. And so I'm fine with looking at things in that way, because my concern is not for my own well-being. You know, my concern, I struggled so much in my life that if I go into struggle mode today, it wouldn't be a big deal to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to make sure that my kids, I have a 19-year-old right now, my youngest son, he's 19 years old. He's working 3 jobs. Because he can't find a full-time job. So he's working 3 part-time jobs. But no, I mean, job, like unemployment is at the lowest it's been ever in the history of America. It's only at 4.5%. Yeah, but you got 19-year-olds working three jobs. Like,
right.
Like, this doesn't make any sense. When I graduated high school. I was 17 years old when I graduated high school, and I went into, I went to work for a crane company, sandblasting, learning how to run a forklift and running a drill press and grinding. Like, you can't put a 17-year-old in that position today.
No,
like back
no.
then it was like, yeah, whatever, you know, like let this freaking kid cut his hand off. Who cares?
Let me pull up here. Typo, what's going on, man?
What's going on, dude? Happy 400
what's up, brother?
For you.
Yeah. It feels like just yesterday. I think you're ripe for this kind of chat where we're talking about, you know, putting people into work and potentially cutting their hand off. I mean, you may give yourself like welder's flash and shit. When actually just thinking about that now, I remember, I want to say it was probably about 6 months ago. We had no work in my shop, and I think it was me and like one other dude were the only two flat rate guys at the time. So they literally started cutting up an engine hoist, and we made a tow hook off of it where you could pick cars up with it and like tow them around with our forklift. And I remember, I think I did get welder's flash all over my face. I'm like, why is my face all like tender? But I was wearing those, it was right around the solar eclipse actually. So I had the glasses on, and I was using those to watch how they were welding. And yeah, like my whole face right around here was all burned up, but the, like, you know, my eyes were fine. So, but yeah, Tommy, to your point though, like, a Peter Schiff brings this up all the time, and I think it's actually a really, really good point that, like, back probably when my dad was a kid, right? My dad will be 56 mm-hmm. this year. You could go to the local gas station and say, hey, I want to learn how to work on cars, so I'm going to check the tire pressures, fill up washer fluid, and put gas in the tank of every single vehicle. And then in my spare time, if I'm not doing that, I want to hang out in the shop and kind of learn to tinker with stuff, just so that way when I'm, you know, let's say right now I'm 14, 15, when I'm 18, 20 years old, I can finally somewhat work on cars. Mm-hmm. You can't do that nowadays, right? Nobody does that anymore. So, you know, there's like, like I was saying earlier, like Americans really haven't flexed this muscle of like manufacturing and blue collar work to the same degree that we did, you know, 180, even like 50 years ago.
Well, and also if you take into consideration, right? So one of my best friends is Gordon McGill, and he writes for Newsweek sometimes, but he's been a truck driver for over 30 years, and he drove road trains in Australia. He's done ice road trucking up in Canada. He's been all over the place driving truck. Mm-hmm. And we talk every time I have him on my show. I'm sure you've heard him on my show. Yeah. Every time I have him on my show, we're talking about driver pay, the way that these legacy carriers are subsidized. Well, if you just go back and you just do like a cursory glance and just kind of like look, adjusted for inflation, the average truck driver in the 1980s was making the value $110,000 a year. This, you know what they're making now? The average.
I was going to say they're probably making around like 48 to 60 grand a year, right?
43.
Okay. Yeah. I remember, Ian Miles Chong was saying something the one day, oh, well, go into the trades. You can make six figures a year in the trades. And I Googled like all the trades you could think of, auto mechanic, truck driver, welder, you name it. All of them were right around, like I said, around 38,000 all the way up to about 60 grand a year. Now, I, as an auto tech, I went to school for a long time. I got all my papers and have been doing it for 13 years professionally and also learned to work on EVs. I make a lot more than your average tech. But I also understand, once again, and that's not pat myself on the back just because I worked my ass off. I'm not your average tech. But like, you know, telling all these kids, oh, just go into the trades. I'm not saying that's a bad idea, but if you're telling them they're going to make six figures a year, they're in for a life of disappointment, because most people that go into trades are never going to make that.
Well, and you'll hear it all the time when people talk about the trucking industry. They'll be like, well, truck drivers make between $85,000 and $100,000 a year. If you own a truck, maybe if you own two trucks, but no. If you go get a job, if a kid walks out the door and walks into one of these colleges nowadays, because you have to go to a school to get the license. You can't do it like I did back in the day, have a company train you and rent a truck, go down to the DMV and take your test. That's how we did it back in the day. You can't do that anymore. You actually have to go to
a quick question that, Tommy, were you locked in on a contract if they trained you how to do it?
Yeah, it was like 1 year.
Okay, well, just you, not to interrupt you completely, I almost considered doing that, but the company that wanted to lock me in on a 5-year contract.
No, I went in with Halliburton, and this was years ago, man. I've been driving truck. I was talking to my boss the other day. It's been 22 years this month I've been driving truck. So I went, this was 2003. I had gotten out of the military. I couldn't find another job. And my mom did workman's comp for Halliburton. So she got me in contact with the Halliburton location near me, which was in Rocher in Texas, a little town in Southeast Texas. And I went and applied with them. They sent me to Corpus Christi for 3 weeks, put me up in a Holiday Inn, trained me how to drive a truck. And then I showed up and they put me on a job. Like that was it. And, you know, I had my paper license and I'm out, you know, driving at 2 o'clock in the morning, hauling cement. And so, but you can't do that now. Now you're looking at $3,000-$5,000 to go to one of these driving schools that's run by your community colleges near you. And then they're hired on and they're rotated in to these positions. It's like, and they start them off making like 40, 39, 40, 41 cents a mile. Right. Well, so when you get a guy like me who had been driving for 21 years or when I stopped driving over the road, I've been driving for 19 years and they're like, yeah, we're only going to pay you 56 cents a mile. And I'm like, yeah, but I've been driving for almost 20 years, no accidents, no tickets, no violations whatsoever on my record. There's nothing to be seen. And oh yeah, but that's fine. Cause next week we got a class of 10, 23-year-olds who just got their license. And yeah, 90% of them aren't going to make it, but there's going to be 10% that do make it and are able to do this job because they want to sell you this trucking job as an economic job. It's not an economic job. It's a lifestyle job. Truck driving is definitely a lifestyle job. If you go driving over the road, you are alone 24/7, 365 days a year. You might get home for 1.5 days every 2 weeks. That's the way they run it. You're gone for 14 days. You're home for 1.5 days. That's it. That's how they do it. And they freaking have driven the income of truck drivers down so low because of government subsidies, because of these schools and the amount of drivers that they're able to push through these classes every week, that it's like, I make as much money working locally as I did when I was driving over the road. And it was not like that when I started driving. If you wanted to make money driving a truck, you went over the road.
Wow. So did the wages like definitely crash? Like, I don't see how that's even sustainable for anyone.
Well, a lot of it's inflation, but it's a 493.1% change in inflation in the trucking industry as far as wages go. And so they want to push people into this career, but it's like, well, what are people getting out of it? You're not going to get valuable people to stay in this career anymore. Right.
Yep.
I was in a situation whenever I started driving a truck, I couldn't make as much money doing anything else at that time. When I entered the trucking industry, I was making for Halliburton, I made $7.50 an hour, but I was getting paid 100 hours a week.
Mm.
So because because the way Halliburton worked it out is like, as long as you're not home, you're getting paid. So the moment I walk out my door to go to the yard, you're on call for 7 days. So the moment I walk out my door, my clock starts, I'm getting paid. And I don't get paid until I walk back in my door. So I'm getting paid for over 100 hours in a week.
Now,
that's how Halliburton did it. Not everybody does it that way.
Yeah, I was gonna say, was that like, would you get overtime though? Like as soon as you would hit 40 hours and over? Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I messaged some people in the one group chat I'm in, and I had the best pay of my entire career after these last 2 weeks, where I technically worked. I worked, I think, 40 hours each week, and I turned in a total of 70 hours each week. So, you know, I technically am getting paid 140 hours, you know, this pay, which is going to be the best pay of my mm-hmm. entire career. But, you know, I don't always have pays like that. Sometimes it's like, okay, well, you go to work, and I'm typically there, you know, 5 till 7 till about 3:45 in the afternoon. There've been days I've worked 12, 13 hours and left with like 2 or 3 hours on my time ticket. But, you know, it's always a gamble. But, you know, like these last 2 weeks, I really put in the fucking work. And then I did have like a bigger job. I had this fucking Cadillac gutted. This customer, I don't want to say what my exact thoughts are about what kind of people live in this car, but they smoked out the two USB ports, as in like they fried the one. It looked like they spilled juice or something in it. And this was like a Cadillac Escalade. So the one USB port has an SD card in it for navigation. And then there's like a port where you could charge your phone. And there's one up front that's just two USB ports. Well, both of them were fried, and I like gutted this vehicle looking for a broken wire. I put all new wiring harness in the center console and did all this shit. Finished it up at the end of one pay period and then rolled in the next pay period and then got paid for it. So it was like 16 hours on this car, just fucking disaster. But it worked out in my favor. But like I said, with the automotive industry, oh, I know where I was going with this. I look back and I kind of think about, you know, people of our parents' generation, and they kind of got to grow up with the technology evolving in cars. So like back in the day, you know, everybody got their tune-ups, their carburetors adjusted, and all their maintenance done on their vehicles back, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And people who are in their 50s, 60s, maybe even late 30s, kind of got to grow up with the vehicles getting more and more advanced. But nowadays, it's like ever since 2010, new refrigerant that takes way longer. You have all these EVs coming up, all these diesels, and just even like the type of injectors now, it's no longer fuel injected, it's direct injected, which are way, you know, way higher PSI. There's so much more technology in these vehicles now, and it's changing so rapidly, but the pay isn't going rapidly up. Where this is kind of where I'm seeing like the same deal, how you mentioned like truck drivers aren't necessarily seeing like the same wage increase versus inflation, where like basically the purchase power or the purchasing power of your salary hasn't grown in accordance with like the advancement of your career. I think that's kind of the point that you were getting at. And it's the same deal in the automotive world.
And they've made these bargains, right? And one of the bargains they've made is if you look at like the states that take in the most federal taxes and are subsidized the most by federal taxes, you'll have like states like Mississippi, and the left will be like, well, it's the red states that are going to hurt if these federal income taxes, you know, aren't going out to subsidize these states. Well, yeah, but okay. Have any of these people ever been to Mississippi? Like, cause I was a truck driver. I drove over the road. I spent time in Mississippi. I remember there was this one town. It was the saddest sight I've ever seen in my life. There was a paper mill that was built about 13 miles outside of this town. And I would go to that paper mill and I'd do a pickup or a drop off. And I would come out and I'd hit this town. The only functioning building in this town was a truck stop. It was it was a gravel parking lot. It was barely smaller than your corner store down the street. It was about the same size. And they had diesel island. That was the only thing that made it a truck stop. And all across the street, there was a host of buildings that were closed down, boarded up. Why? What happened to this town? All the industry left. All the money left. Because where did that money go? It went to China. They sent that stuff overseas, right? So all the industry that the men worked and all these boutiques that the women kept up and going within the town all shut down. Because all the jobs got moved to China. I mean, you've seen this up there in Pennsylvania, Kyle. I mean, like Cincinnati is another town I think of whenever I think of like that. You drive through Cincinnati and it's like one of the coolest freaking visuals because it's like, it just has industrial America. Like America in its prime written all over it, and all those buildings are shut down. Every single one of them closed.
If you go, I remember, I think about this quite a bit, pretty much everywhere I drive. When I was a kid, I grew up in a small town called Brackenridge, and it was always so weird to me because I remember they tore down the mill at one point and then they put it back up. But like, I would walk out of my house and, you know, to the right of me was like a retirement community, right, like two blocks down, and then to the left there was this enormous mill, right? And I remember when they tore it down, it just looked so weird because I'm so used to seeing like this mill that would basically overhang on the horizon, and then when it was torn down it just looked very empty. But then they put it back up, and just like everywhere you drive up here there's factories. And I make this point all the time, but literally when you're driving into my town, there's a sign on the left side of the road if you're going up the hill, and it says, "Welcome to Vandergrift, you know, the first America's first worker-owned town." And, you know, down East Vandergrift, there's a factory down there. There's a factory literally when you're leaving out of town to go up to go to my in-laws up in Ford City. There's just factories and stuff like that everywhere. And like you said, it's all largely been, I think it's because over time the U.S. became more of a service sector economy because regulation and then, you know, special interests and everything, they put the boots on the necks of Americans and said, okay, well, now you can go into service sector jobs rather than these good manufacturing jobs. And even like, you know, my wife used to work a manufacturing job at Philips where they built CPAP machines. But, you know, that place shut down now too. And that was like a really good job. Got you like 5 weeks paid vacation. She didn't make as much as like I make, but I kept thinking about it. I'm like, man, had I known what I know now, I would have never went to college. I would have went and started working at Philips because you start off with like 2-3 weeks paid vacation. You make like 12 or 15 bucks an hour, but you know, at like 18, 19, it's not too bad, right?
Right.
You know, and especially like this would have been about 10 years ago. So would have been pretty damn good. I wouldn't, like I said, not as much as I make now, nowhere near as much. And I would still probably be making less, but I'd have like 6 weeks paid vacation. And fuck, they even offered paid paternity leave for fathers for like 3 months. Yeah, they don't offer shit. Like, my wife and I went camping this weekend. I was talking to one of my in-laws' friends, and they're like, "Oh, you don't have paternity leave?" I'm like, "Fucking dealerships don't offer you nothing. Take a week off to go see my daughter, and then next thing you know, up, I'm back to work." Like, yeah, those jobs don't offer shit like that anymore. Yeah, good typo.
Yeah, it's very similar stories to like Southern Illinois.
Yeah.
And it's very similar to like my small town. And like there's a couple factories in my town. They've been there for years. And like I know people's grandparents that like they worked at that factory for years. Their wives stayed home. They had like 3 or 4 kids. They bought a house, bought like 2 cars, and like they retired. And like they were like just fine from these jobs. Nowadays, like if you're a young man and you go work there, your prospects for finding a wife are out the window. You probably can't even find like a house, even in a small town, to buy with that wage. And the sad part, like, you know, it's really strange. And I almost like compared to like the people that still live there, I almost had a unique experience where I kind of saw it like almost like a night and day difference, because I lived there until I was 18. And then I left and I was gone for 10 years because I joined the military. I lived out in Phoenix. And then when I came back, I was, you know, it was like, whoa, like half my town is Mexicans now. Like, I'm like, what the hell? Like, what the hell did this come from? And like, there's like a lot more Mexican restaurants. There's Mexican grocery stores. And like, that was just not, you know, that was just not how it was when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, everyone, like, I don't know exactly, I don't have any like proof or evidence, but everyone in my small town is like, they're hiring illegals and they're paying them under the table. And if you talk to anyone at the bank, getting them bank accounts and their social security cards, it's all kind of like a little shaky. It doesn't make sense where the stuff comes from. But it's, and so now, like, literally, like at 3 p.m. every day, that the factory, the shift changes, and you'll see like just mass amounts of people walk out, and it's all foreigners now. Like, I mean, there's a few white guys in there, but they're usually older guys getting close to retirement. But it's just completely different. Like, it's really weird to watch like the demographic changes that happened to like the area I live in. It's all over around here. Even where I live now, it's still happening. And And like Tommy was saying with Mississippi, like, you know, there's a bunch of like towns. They used to be booming towns. Like they were growing up. They had like something to do, like industry there.
They and had now hairdressers just, and boutiques and
yeah,
because this, that, and the other. Was, and now there's nothing there.
Yeah, because there's just, you know, because those jobs were there, it would create a community, and that community needed, like you said, boutiques and hairdressers and all that, and it's just gone. I mean,
but
it's
the
like
people still live there. The people still live there, and they live in, I mean, damn near third world conditions. Like, I've been to a third world country. It's terrible all the way they're living.
And the effect of that, too, is at least, like, for my, like, my graduating class, I would probably say 60... damn near 70% of them left and moved to the big city because there was just no high-end job opportunity for them to find in my town unless they wanted to commute like an hour or something like that, and no one, or an hour and a half or something. So a lot of people moved to the suburbs outside the city or the city themselves, and it just hollows out these small towns. And I think, you know, a little bit of that is just like came from industrialization, like in cities themselves, so people had to go to jobs there, the consumer market, people going into different career fields, because it was all about, I mean, no one was telling me in high school to go into like blue collar jobs or anything like that. No one. It was go to college, get a degree in whatever,
and go work for Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, go work for the banks. Yeah,
I heard a guy the other day, just completely out of touch, and he's like look, it's just, this is America. Nobody wants to do blue collar jobs. Everybody wants to get out of, go to college and go work for Goldman Sachs because it's just a better life. And it's like, that's not true. That's not true at all. Like, I graduated high school. I was 17 years old. I didn't want to be in school anymore. I wanted to work. That's what I wanted to do. My kids are the same way. They graduated high school. They wanted to work. They did not want to go back, be back in school, because, well, first things first, the schools are tailored for women. They are not tailored for men.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so there's no man worth his weight in salt wants to sit in a room and be lectured at for an hour. Like, I'm sorry. That doesn't sound like fun. And props to all the guys that can do that. But that just didn't sound like what I wanted to do. So what I did is I went and got probably one of the hardest jobs I could have gotten at that time as a sandblaster, you know, and I worked my ass off, and I did that for a year. And then I moved to another company and they hired me as a painter. Right. And I was moving up. I was like learning new skills as I went, and I was figuring it out. And there is not a damn thing I did when I was 17, 18, 19 years old that I couldn't do today. But yeah, I don't have to do that shit anymore. But I worked my way through it.
I really feel for the people who are younger than all of us here, really. Typo and I are both 30, and Tommy, you're mid-40s, right?
I'm 45, yeah.
45, okay, yeah. Tommy, I don't know if you could perhaps relate to this because you got a few years on Typo and I, not to rub that in, but you know, I'm sure Typo feels the same way, but like my younger siblings are, I think, 19 and 21, 22. And I'm kind of looking at them and I'm like, you know, I love them and I hope they do well, but like, I don't know how they're ever going to afford a house because, right, you know, interest rates being higher, and, you know, we can sit here and go into abstract Austrian economics and be like, yeah, there's a lot of inflation, so you need to encourage more people to save. I agree with that. But at the same time, you look at the younger generation, it's like, they're fucked. They have no chance. They might not ever own a house because, you know, like to get a shithole house, even in Pennsylvania, you look like $150,000 and it's going to need a whole ton of work. And you're making you're at a job making maybe 40 to 60 grand a year. So your mortgage is going to be $700 to $1,100 a month. And then you have a car payment on top of that. Like,
right,
granted, they got an old man that will take care of them and give them a car and everything. But like other kids who parents, you know, can't get them a car and take care of the car, it's like, what the fuck are you going to do? I don't know how these younger, you know, how the younger generations are really just going to make it by. Like, I have faith that they're going to do well in their career, but like their purchasing power is gone. So basically all that to say, like, did you feel that same way for people of like Typo and I's age, or did you have a little bit more faith?
No, it was never even a thought, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, but you also got to remember, I was raised, I had five kids. I was just trying to like make ends meet. I didn't really have time to think about the future for everybody else. I was just trying to make it day to day and make sure my kids were eating and everything was taken care of, you know? But I feel what you're saying, because my kids are the ages of your brother and sister.
Right. You
know? And so, you know, my youngest is 19.
That's right.
My second youngest just turned 21 in January. And then I have, 27, 25, and 24. So my kids are all right there, you know, in the beginning stages. And, you know, my daughter's doing pretty well. She got in, but I mean, she's working for a storage facility that provides an apartment for her. And so she's doing pretty well for her and her daughter. But yeah, my boys, they're struggling. They're trying to figure it out. They're like, you know, I grew up, my dad had calluses on his hands. You know, I grew up and my dad was busting his ass. Oh, my hands are terrible, dude. Look at that.
Yeah, I get it.
So, you know, and it's, you know, that's what I do. If I'm not working at work, and then I'm at home and I'm doing something in the yard. I'm out there, you know, with a shovel on the business end of the shovel, or freaking running a weed eater, or I'm doing something out there. You know, I have a bunch of seedlings I need to get planted, and I got all kinds of stuff I need to get done, over the next couple of days while I'm off. And so, yeah, the kids are looking and they're like, well, how did it work for you, Dad? And I'm like, well, you know, it's kind of like, I remember sitting down with my grandpa one time. I was working for the Carpenters Union out of Lake Charles, and I'd gotten laid off from a job, and he wanted to do an addition to his house. And I wasn't a journeyman carpenter, but I'd been reading the books. I'd been taking the classes. I was in the union. He was like, hey, look, I'll pay you $9 an hour cash under the table to do an addition on my trailer and make my trailer a non-mobile home. Cause he had a 14 by 60 or whatever it is. And I was like, okay. So we did the patio on the front. We started forming in the back, and the guy that ran in the concrete owned his own concrete truck. And my grandpa was like, this guy, he is not wealthy. He's not rich by any stretch of the imagination, but he's a survivor, and that's what you want to be. Mm-hmm. And this guy was like, yeah, I worked at the plants and I saved up some money and I bought me a dump truck and a concrete truck. And so if I get laid off, I have something I can fall back on. Like, working blue collar, you can't do that nowadays. You can't afford that. You can't afford the upkeep and the maintenance and all the stuff you have to do to keep up with these vehicles that they're putting out there nowadays. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to work on the old stuff. I got a guy down the road who runs a dump truck. That dump truck must be older than me. And he's the guy I use to bring in the material for my driveway when I need to redo my driveway, which I need to redo. But, you know, he's a nice guy. And I'm like, hey, and I'll just call him up and I'll be like, hey, man, I need this. And he's like, I'll get it to you this day. And he brings it to me and I freaking get out there and go to work, pay the guy cash money, you know? And so, but that's kind of like a lost species. You know, that's, my grandpa was telling me that when he was working and of working age, when he was coming up in the workforce, there was a lumber mill down the road that if you were out of a job, if you got laid off, you would just go stand outside their gate. Mm-hmm. And they would just pick random people, come in, go to work, and kind of like the Mexicans at Home Depot, you know, and, they would go in and they would go to work. And if you made it past a certain amount of time, I can't remember exactly how much time it was, but if you made it past a certain amount of time, that lumber mill would hire you on full time. And he said, I never worked there full time because I was working as a machinist for the plants. So my layoffs were usually only like a week or two, but I would go and I would work for those weeks and keep food coming in, keep money coming in and the family fed while I was waiting on a new job to pop up. And you don't have those opportunities nowadays because they've completely gutted the middle class. They're driving down our wages and they're devaluing our money.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, there used to be like this concept of like an all American where like, you know, American, like a guy could be a mechanic, know enough about
jack of all trades, master of none.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And could like, you know, put up a wall and do some construction in his own carpentry in his own house. And I don't know when that was like necessarily lost, but at some point in time, it became either cheaper or less time consuming for you to just hire that out. And then, okay, that stuff gets fixed. You don't have to worry about it. But now that things are getting more expensive again to like add on something to your house or make a little adjustment to your vehicle and stuff, it's like now you have all these younger guys that are like, well, I don't know how to do any of that. Like, I don't know how to. You know, I know people that don't know how to like do something simple, like change their own oil. Like I see it all the time. It kind of blows my mind, and you know, I'm not the best carpenter, but you know, I can watch a couple of YouTube videos and figure something out. I've done it before. So I just think like there is this like, I don't know when, but Americans like, you know, I always talk about this, but like Sears, you used to be able to order like literally how you want your house to be designed. And they would send a whole everything. And then they would give you a manual and you would build your house. And they'll send you all the parts, everything you need for your house. And you would build. And there's still those houses are still up to this day. You can look them up online. There's some of them that are pretty famous. Because that's how Sears started. They literally gave you the stuff to build your house, which is kind of crazy. But like now, like people, we are like, I don't know, a lot of people are just not capable of that anymore. And I think that's kind of the downside of like going into this more technological side of things is like, you kind of lose the simple stuff along the way that it's almost like it makes sense why like people say like ancient civilizations like they maybe had this technology but somehow it was lost, and I was like, well, how does that happen? That doesn't make sense. And now, but you're kind of watching it in real time that like literally families are losing things they knew how to do before because it was easier to pay someone else to do it, or it was just or cheaper to just buy a new one. Because you know, like my grandpa, he was so, I mean, he made decent money, but he was kind of a cheapo. He grew up in the Great Depression time, and he would fix everything. Nowadays, if like something breaks, it's actually cheaper to not even waste your time and then just buy a completely new one,
right?
Whatever it is. And I don't know. I think that's just something that's really changed in the in Americans.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't
be something. There's got to be something with like the gig economy with this too, where like a lot of people don't really have a 9-to-5 job anymore. Like there's a lot of people working Lyft or like these other apps where they can make money. And then I'm sure there's also like video work. Like I think about my stepbrother, right? He went to RMU for 5 years for like video editing, and he is incredible at it. I mean, I've seen some of the stuff they did. He went on tour with, he was a pretty big rapper, but he did like all his video and photography work, looked incredible. There's probably so many people like that that just never graduate college and just kind of drift on by and, you know, just make it through and don't really staple anything down, but they just kind of ramble on through. But that's what I mean. Like you get more and more people like that rather than people kind of like us three, really. I mean, you know, I learned to work on cars for a long time, and, you mentioned like watching YouTube videos. I remember a breaker shit out in my house. I'm like, all right, well, let's see how to do this. And I remember the breaker was fucked for like ever and a half. But then when I finally did, I'm like, oh, this is actually like really easy. Like maybe I should have did this to be an electrician. Yeah. But yeah, same deal. You know, I cleaned out my dishwasher the one day, like as in like took it all apart, cleaned everything and put it all back together. You kind of learn eventually like, oh no, this shit needs to be done. And like even my guitars here, I've started to learn how to set those up because like I don't know anybody that I could reliably take my guitars to and have them set up in a satisfactory way. So I'm like, okay, well, fuck it. I'll start dicking around. You know, I can fix cars. I should be able to fix a guitar, right? Well, 50-50, but, you know, you just kind of start dicking around with stuff and eventually figure it out. I don't think a lot of people do that anymore because we have gone to more of like a, you think about leases, we call them like 5-year throwaways where people, you know, basically they lease their vehicles, they rent their houses. People don't really own stuff anymore. So when you don't really own stuff, you don't really feel the obligation to take care of it anymore where, you know, I'm kind of like an exception to this. You know, I've been married now. I've been with my wife for 6 years, daughter due in a couple months. I've had a lot of the same guitars now for a few years. I lived in this house. This is the longest I've ever lived in one house. Just, I want to say about a week ago is 8 years that I've lived in this house. And I'm like so happy about that, but you know, starting to fix stuff. Like I said, most people just kind of lease a car and then, you know, whenever it's time to get rid of it on to the next thing where, you know, I still have my 84 Monte Carlo from when I was 17 years old. I've been driving Cobalt since I was about 18. And, you know, my wife's car is going to be paid off here shortly and we're not going to get another car. We're just going to keep running the shit until the fucking wheels fall off the damn things. You know, most people don't do that. I think they just kind of look at it as, okay, well, this is just a vehicle to get me to my next gig. And they don't really think about fixing the stuff that they have.
Well, I remember growing up too. And, you know, in the 90s as a teenager, and most of us looked at these white collar jobs that everybody wants to do nowadays as like pussy jobs. Like, I'm a man. I don't want to do that. You know, and it was kind of like shunned. Like that's a job for a woman. You're going to sit in an office all day and freaking stare at a computer screen. That's a job for a woman. That's not what men do. You know, men get out there and they get hurt and, you know, bleed and sweat and bust their ass. And it was just kind of the way that everything was looked at the time. There was like a glorification of actually being good at a blue collar job. And those blue collar jobs bring a sense of purpose and meaning to you. You know, like when Kyle fixes somebody's car and they really needed that car, you know, like I'm sure that feels great. You know, like I know what, like I'm delivering lumber now, but I've delivered food. I've done all kinds of stuff, you know, delivered all sorts of material that I know that people couldn't live without. And so there's a sense of purpose to that. But you know, when you're just sitting there checking numbers and freaking running books, like what's your sense of purpose? Just making money? Like that's no purpose. That's no meaning. You're not doing anything better for society. You know, you're freaking just lining your own pockets. But that's what our world's all about nowadays. It's all about being the grifter, all about lining your own pockets.
Yeah.
Like Douglas Murray.
And like, it's kind of, you know, a lot of conservatives will tell people like, oh, guys go into blue collar jobs. But, you know, the truth is like, you know, not like for your prospects of finding a mate, like a woman, they're not looking at
blue collar. It diminishes. Guys. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not. That's not a lifestyle that they desire. Like that is just like no one. No, I'm so I love the guys I work with. Most of them are divorced. Most of them are, it's hard for them to have a relationship for whatever reason. Maybe there's a lot of them are stubborn. Like they got their own problems too. I'm not saying these are perfect men, but you know, it's just not desirable in like, you know, a marriage capacity that like, oh, this guy is going to like literally work himself to the bone, break down. He's always tired, comes home, he's like, or not around very often because he's working overtime or whatever it is. And that is just not desirable. Like, that's just not what women want these days. So it's like, you're telling a bunch of guys to go do these jobs. And like, it's like, what are they? I mean, they're working for their own dignity in a way. And that's good in a sense, but there's no purchasing power. You have no prospects for like a decent woman. And it just sucks.
It's because most of these women can go sit in the HR department at any given corporation, make six figures, and they look at their husband who's now, you know, whose industry back in the 80s or 90s may have been in the six figures, but is now, you know, $60,000-$70,000 a year. And she's like, I want a guy who makes more money than me. Like, what kind of security are you providing? If a man's job is to provide security, then what security are you providing me whenever I can duplicate your income?
Yeah, women have basically solved that end of the bargain for themselves, where like they don't need a guy for their income anymore. So really, that eliminates that aspect for men. So even if you do make a shitload of money, most women are like,
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Okay, well, you know, I make money too, so it's not really that big of a deal. So really, that leaves you kind of with like, you know, essentially the game aspect or the looks aspect. And we see now that a lot of women are looking for just the looks aspect, where like they're not looking for guys who have dignity and, you know, morality and stuff like that. You know, we can hand wave all, you know, wave our hands about this all we like, but the fact is, it's just like Typo said, like you may not have the greatest prospects because most people don't look at blue collar jobs like honorable, you know, like necessary jobs. I remember driving home on Christmas Eve a couple years ago, and I remember watching a dude working on the side of a building. I think he was welding or something like that. But I'm like, you know, that's how fucking society runs. That dude right there, Christmas Eve, yeah, on a fucking freezing night in Pennsylvania, welding on the side of a fucking building to make sure that everybody's Christmas tree lights up on fucking Christmas Day. And you know what? The average woman looks at that guy and she doesn't even recognize he's there. There's this joke about like a woman in a CVS or something like that saying, do you see that guy right there? Who, that guy at the cash register who's, you know, 6'5", blue eyes, finance, as the joke goes. But no, the actual guy stalking the shelves, stuff like that. Like women don't really see those guys because they're not attractive. They're not working a job that's appealing to them, because stalking shelves or fixing cars or stuff like that isn't like this huge, it's not a socially glorified job anymore. Whereas, you know, 40, 50 years ago, like we kind of were talking about a little bit earlier, the purchasing power from these blue collar jobs all those years ago was a lot greater. So it wasn't that big of a deal. But now because a globalized sexual marketplace, women have the perception that they could get a lot better when it's like, that's not directly available to you. And those guys that you think you can get, they may tap it once or twice, but they're not going to keep you. Right? Like, that's just what it is.
And how much of that is like, I don't know about you, Kyle, but I know with my job, because I'm in a truck so long and I'm driving so much. When it comes to my day off, I don't want to move. I don't want to leave. I want to be home.
Yeah.
Like, what am I working for if I don't get to enjoy my house? Right. I leave my house at 4:30 in the morning. I don't get home until 8:30 at night. Like, when I'm home, I don't want to leave my house. I want to be home.
Yeah.
You know, and all these women want to go to the Canary Islands over the weekend, and they want to go to, you know, the Hamptons, and you're like, that's not reality, man. That's not how real people live. And so they're all chasing down this ideal that they're never going to reach. And a blue collar guy doesn't have a chance in hell to offer them anything of the sort. You know, maybe once a year we can take a vacation. Maybe if we're lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing too, is like more women are going to college now. So that means they're moving to the cities. So like, I mean, this may be just a small town problem, but you know, guys, you know, there's a lot more guys that stay behind in small towns than younger women do. And it's hard to tell, like, you know, you tell guy, oh, just, you know, don't go to the cities. Like, cities are horrible. But it's like, okay, well, all their female prospects are going to the city. So like, what are they going to do? Just stay here.
The Con Inc stuff, when it comes, it's basically like the pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It's like, okay, well, thanks. Now what?
You know?
If all the women live in the city and
marry the cross-eyed girl next door.
Yeah, exactly. But like, you know, basically like these conning talking points of just telling men to man up all the time. It's like, all right, well, you know, what the fuck am I supposed to do at this point where, you know, you're a 15 to 20 year old dude and you're looking at like, okay, I may have to spend six figures to get into a decent job. Right. And then I still may not have a chance of getting with a woman, you know, that is desirable to me. You know, there's always the joke of the epiphany phase where basically women get in like their late 20s, early 30s, and all of a sudden they become God-fearing Christian women after taking 30, you know, miles of penis for years at a time. But I mean, there's something to that, but like, I don't want that. I want, you know, somebody that's younger, attractive.
I'm sorry. I tripped, fell out of my clothes and landed on a continent of dick. I don't know what to tell
you. Yeah, exactly. But that's typically the only, you know, single moms typically. By the time a lot of these guys are ready to, you know, these girls are ready to settle down, but they have a kid or they're just not desirable by that age. So, you know, for guys out there, man, I feel for you. It's not fucking easy. And, you know, the conservative Inc types just say, oh, you need to man up, no more GameCube. You don't get to play video games until your wife is all settled in and stuff like that. It's like, all right, no, go fuck yourself. Because, you know, if your message is that just for men, all you have is suffering ahead, how do you ever expect anybody to listen to you? Like, there has to be some kind of reward in all this, right? Like, and I'm not saying that like that message is faulty, but at the same time, you can't tell men that like you just have to suffer endlessly and there's no benefit for you at the end of the day, other than like maybe you'll get to have a family, you know?
Well, I mean, to be fair, until I was done paying child support, my life was nothing but sacrifice. Right. I did nothing I enjoyed. I just worked. I couldn't go to the doctor if I were sick. I couldn't go to the dentist whenever I had teeth problems. I just deal with it. You just have to find a way to deal with it. And I just did. And I found a way to deal with it. And so now I've my child support's done. And I, you know, have my little property here that I live on and I enjoy and I take care of, and you know, a beautiful wife that takes good care of me and cooks great food. We had grilled octopus tonight. It was so fucking badass, but it was so good. But now it's like I can take care of myself, and I don't know how. I don't have the practice of doing those things. So when there's like, oh, I have this, I don't know, I don't feel well today. I don't even think to go to the doctor. I'm just like, fuck it. I'll be fine. I'm just going to work through it. You know, the one good thing I can say is I didn't grow up in the gaming generation. I was just before that. I mean, like Nintendo came out when I was like 8 or 9, mm-hmm. I think. And so we weren't really in the gaming generation, but I grew up fishing. My dad liked to fish. We would go fishing a lot. And now that I'm done with child support, I have the money to where I can put it into my fishing. I can go fishing. I can go. And that's something I really enjoy doing. And my wife doesn't mind if I go do it. You know, I'm trying to get the little beginning of spring out of the way so I can go fishing. I wanted to go this week, but it's not going to happen. But maybe next week, maybe I can go next week. But it gives me that time to relax. And everybody needs that time to unwind and relax. And if a guy, if playing a video game is what that guy does to unwind and relax, dude, play your fucking video game. Just monitor how much time you spend doing that.
Right. Don't sedate.
Because you have to be responsible too. So don't let it take away from your responsibilities. And if you're a responsible guy and some chick's like, oh, well, you play video games 1 hour a night or whatever it is to unwind before you go to bed, and I can't deal with that. Well, that's her problem and you don't need her in your life. Find somebody else. You can find another chick, dude. There's a trailer park nearby that, you know, will offer up a nice chick that thinks $70,000 a year is rich. So, you know, go, you know, find the hottie in the trailer park, you know, get her some braces. She'll be fine.
Yeah, I agree. And like, there is a fine line between like sedation and just enjoying something. Like if you're getting pissed drunk 24/7, probably want to lay off the booze a little
bit. Don't you judge me.
Listen, I finished off my bottle of scotch last night, but yeah, like you having a drink every here and there is fine, but don't let that be your entire life. And right. You know, I hate marijuana, but like, you know, if you want to have a joint every here and there, okay, whatever. But if it's like every day, you can't go without puffing a joint or pounding down a drink or something like that, then it's like, all right, well, maybe you have a little bit of a problem. And same deal with like, if you're doing all these things to the exclusion of responsibility, then you probably got an issue. But you know, I think some people, like, it's like we've talked about it a decent bit on Five Till Midnight with like the whole grind set kind of guys, like your PBD and positivity hustlers, where it's like, oh no, just, you know, work 80 hours a week and, you know, eventually it'll come to you. It's like, no, that kind of work isn't sustainable.
Like, well, that's not necessarily true. I mean, there are people that are workaholics. Like it literally is a thing. I have people in my family who work to relax. That's what they do. You know, I'm thinking of my uncle specifically. He would go and he would work at the ConocoPhillips plant, and then he would get home and he would build and work on cars and motorcycles and this, and he never stopped. That's all he ever did. He started an antique business at one time, so he had something to do on his days off, you know? And so some people are like that. Some people are workaholics, but don't get down on yourself if you need that time to just go brain dead and just stare off into space and not think about shit, you know? So, you know, there's all kinds of different ways you can do it. Like, I got all these books around me. I read, I drink beer, I work out in the yard. I do all kinds of stuff. I don't just do one thing. Like, different days call for different antidotes, you know? Like, it's just sometimes I'll do something and I'm like, okay. And you know, that's just the way it is that day. That's what I felt like doing, you know? So don't be too hard on yourself. Try to figure out how you function, what's healthy for you, and do what's healthy, but don't freaking drive yourself mad. Like, you just can't drive yourself mad. If you can't find a girl, then quit looking, because she'll find you. Like, I have never once in my life ever, I've been married 3 times. Never have I chased a woman. It's never happened. It just, and I'm not pretty. Like, so there's hope for you, man. You can get that chick. You know, like, so don't worry about it. You got to quit worrying about it. If you're trying too hard, they can feel that you're trying too hard. Right. Yeah. And that's a turnoff. Nobody wants somebody who's trying too hard. Right. You got to try hard at the things that matter. Quit worrying about the things that you can't control.
Yeah.
Well, I just ended that conversation.
I was waiting for Tyler to say something after he wanted to jump in there.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah, and like one thing that I always try to remember is that, like, man, going to the gym, at least for me, is something that I feel is always like a necessary stress. Like, I see whenever guys kind of get down about women, I'm like, okay, well, are you going to the gym? Because that, to me, it's kind of like, man, that's going to be the first step in the right direction, because that's like the first time that I think a lot of guys will ever start and like prioritize themselves over everybody else is in that moment. And that's why I think, you know, I did a Rule Zero on this, which is, you know, Popular Manosphere kind of show. And one of the reasons why I wanted to do it specifically on working out is because it really is kind of like the first time that, like I said, a lot of guys will just be able to focus on themselves to the exclusion of everybody else. Now, once again, you don't want that to become pathological. And I'm sure there's some dudes who spend hours and hours and hours at the gym. I see guys like that all the time who just go in there and play grab ass. But it's like, no, if you're in there for like 45 minutes to an hour and a half, and this is your you time where you listen to music, you tune out, and it's just you and the fucking iron, there's nothing like that. Because once again, that's your you time. I need that time for me to do what I want to do and, you know, not worry about anything else. And then once I'm done with that, then, you know, we start pouring in other shit. But like, you got to have an activity that is sort of like that for you, where basically you can focus on you to the exclusion of everybody else, because you know that's what you need in order to be optimal for you.
Yeah, it's honestly like, there's a couple of guys, I don't know how, I think they were talking about, like, we were at the bar and they were much younger than me, like in their 21, 22. And I don't know, it was right around the time when like the Andrew Tate phenomenon started popping off. Mm-hmm. And so I don't remember how we got to this, but I basically told them the same thing that you just said. I was like, dude, just go to the gym and focus on your career. Cause yeah, like, I don't know, these dudes kind of awkward, didn't really have, I would say, the looks going for them, I would say. And I was like, dude, just go to the gym and focus on your career. And in a couple of years, things will be different. You'll be older. You'll be a little bit wiser, a little bit more mature. And girls will recognize that. And like, you'll be all right, man. Not everyone gets married like right out of high school. Not everyone finds their wife in college. You know, some guys don't get married until they're like, well, I'm 30 and I'm not married. So like, some guys don't get married in their 20s. And I was like, it's okay. It's not a big deal. And don't overthink it. Don't worry about it too much. Just focus on yourself. Don't focus on like what you have to do to get a girl. Just focus on things you can do to improve yourself. That'll make you more desirable to women, but not necessarily to work on yourself to become more desirable. Just work on yourself to be a better version of you, is what I told them. And I think that's
And if you work on your career and you become pretty successful, I mean, like moderately successful, and you have a house and you're pretty stable and you're living a decent life and you're 40 years old and you're not married yet, and next thing you know, 25-year-olds are knocking on your door, you know, like, yeah, okay. Like, you can still impregnate them. Like, if a chick's 45, she can't get impregnated anymore. But at 45, a man can still do what he needs to do to have a family. So, hey, man, don't worry about it. You'll get there. It's going to happen. Yeah. Just freaking everybody has their, like, as it said, everybody has their own cross to bear. So just bear your cross, go with it, focus on what you can control. And that's that. Don't worry about everything else.
Yeah. There's a few girls from my class that married guys that were 10, 15 years older than them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, it's pretty normal.
It's
like,
not unheard of.
No,
especially in the modern dating age with these dating apps and stuff like that, chicks are looking for a successful older man. They want somebody who's more stable, who can show them a little bit of excitement and spend some money on them. You know, it's just the society you live in right now. So, you know, you'll be that older man one day. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually completely agree. I think about this quite a bit when I think about kind of how younger generations are going through stuff now. And, I was talking to the one kid that I work with. He's 19, I want to say. And obviously I'm 30, so I'm 11 years older than him. And he's just starting out in the automotive field. And I'm like, man, I just remember first job I ever had in the automotive field. I was literally making minimum wage. I could have went to McDonald's and made the same fucking wage. And just, you know, years and years of just getting my ass metaphorically and sometimes physically whooped just day in, day out. And then finally, after, you know, 5 or 6 years, I started making decent money. And then, you know, success began to just, you know, it accumulated over time. And I don't see that happening with a lot of guys anymore, where they're willing to really just take the time and, you know, get their teeth kicked in a little bit, which it sucks, but it's a necessary part of kind of like,
they'd rather play on TikTok.
Yeah. Dorian Yates,
the TikTok says, generation.
Exactly. Yeah. Dorian Yates has a saying about, like, you know, when you go to lift the first time, you're gonna get blisters on your hand, and then, you know, you keep lifting and then those blisters start to go away and they become calluses, and just over time, you know, it doesn't bother you anymore. And I think a lot of guys are scared to get those metaphorical calluses. But, yeah, you know, that's a very, very necessary part of being a guy, really. I mean, you know, we used to, I'm sure everyone's heard, you know, the stories about like trials of becoming a man, you know, where you go through a certain trial or something like that. And then after all that, then you're considered a man. It's kind of like that rite of passage. That's a word. That's the phrase I'm looking for. Yeah. Like, we don't have those rites of passage anymore.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing I would say that the military kind of showed me, because like, you'll spend like the 2, maybe even 3 years as basically a bottom bitch in the military. Like, hey, if they need like shit to be cleaned, you got to go do that. Like, or you got to go move stuff. You got to go do, you got to go set stuff up. You got to go do that. And it takes time. And, or if you're, you know, ambitious or a good leader at a young age, maybe you can get promoted faster. But for most people in the military, you basically just have to put your time in. You got to do the work, and then eventually you've been in long enough, you'll get the rank of like an NCO. And then now you're the one telling like the new guys, like, hey, go clean that stuff, go do this, go do that. But that took, I mean, it took me like 2.5 years before I got to that point in the military. So it was like 2.5 years of grinding, doing what I'm told, you know, can't, not talking back, you know, doing exactly what everything I got to do. And then eventually, like, you get to a position where you're like, oh, I don't have to, I'm not the bottom guy anymore. And, you know, just being in welding, there's a few kids that I've worked with that they're like, oh, I'm a welder, I got my certificate, I don't want to do all this, like, you know, take out the trash or all this grinding. And I'm like, dude, this is the job. Like, this, like, it's not like, oh, you got a certificate, so you just get to skip all the bullshit and you just get to weld all, because we call welding, everyone, like, if you get to a point and where you're doing a job and then you're just welding all day, we call that the gravy, because welding is the fun part, it's the easy part. But like putting something together and like making sure it's square and designed right and the measurements are right, that stuff's a little bit more complicated and kind of annoying. And then we get to the, I'm like, once you have everything like structurally together, then you weld it, it's the gravy. But a lot of times new guys, you know, we don't want them to like put stuff together because they kind of mess it up. And by the time they start putting it together, it's like it takes much longer to take something apart in the welding field than it is to put it together. So if they mess it up, it's like, okay, dude, now we got to like start over completely. You got to clean all this metal off, air arc this out, clean this out. Mm. So a lot of the times they'll have the guy, like the younger guys, they'll like, okay, you put this together, and then they'll put it together, and then they'll have an older guy come and weld it up. So then they'll go and put something else together. So they'll keep doing the hard part over and over and over. And then we'll just have the older guy do the welding part sometimes. And it's just stuff like that where it's like, hey man, you got to put your time in. You got to like, yeah, you're going to have to go clean the fridge. You're going to have to go clean the bathroom. Sorry, man. But the bottom guy does that stuff. And eventually though, 3-4 years from now, when someone retires and you're not, and there's another new guy, and then you're telling him like, hey man, go clean the bathroom. Like, but a lot of the young guys, yeah, like a lot of the young guys I've worked, like I'm not trying to, I hate throwing shade on the younger generation, but there has been a few guys, this is just personal experience with me, that they come in and they think they don't have to do that stuff. They can skip over the bottom, being the bottom bitch guy. And sorry, man, but that's just not how it works in the real world. You got to start at the bottom and work your way up. You got to do all the hard shit first.
Throw them that blaster hood and see how they react.
People really don't like when you tell them that, like, hey, you are the bottom bitch in the situation. Like, and I get it. I didn't want to accept it either. But at a certain point, you're like, all right, no, this is being part of the hierarchy, if you will, where like, you know, I didn't start off being the second lead tech in my shop, and that's where I'm at now. Like, the lead tech was gone all last week, Brian. So I was handing out the work and kind of responsible for overseeing all the shop functions this week. It wasn't like I just stumbled into that. It's, you know, 13 years of doing it day in, day out, losing my ass, winning, you know, off my ass, just, you know, ups and downs, and over a decade of doing shit. You know, I always tell people the story of the first summer I ever worked for my dad. It was over 100 degrees on a humid Pennsylvania day, and we were probably like a mile at most away from the fucking Allegheny River. And my dad throws me the keys to this van and says, "Hey, go do a tune-up on this thing." And I asked him, like, just right out there. It was a shag carpet, like a Chevy Venture van or something like that. He said, "No, you're fine. You can do that in the parking lot." And there is no shade. So, I mean, I'm dripping sweat, pulling the dog box off this fucking Chevy van outside in 100% humidity, 100 degree Pennsylvania day. And, yeah, if you told a lot of kids that were just getting into the field to go do that, they wouldn't do it. They'd leave. They'd call off. They wouldn't come in the next day. But it's like, no, you know what? That builds character. So that way, when you are 10 years down the line and you're making good money, you can appreciate where you're at now. And you can realize that, hey, those new guys, they kind of need their dick dug into the dirt a little bit. So that way, when they get to your position, they're grateful and they understand that, like, no, I hated it at the time, but you know what? It made me a better worker.
Yeah, like I was telling you earlier, like my first job out of high school, I was 17. I was a sandblaster running a forklift, a drill press, and a grinder. You know who my bosses were? They were a bunch of 35, 40, and 50-year-old former offshore welders. That's who I was working for. Like, I was getting hammered daily. Like, it wasn't fun. I was a scrawny little dude. When I was 17 years old, I weighed like 135 pounds. I was a scrawny little shit.
Yeah.
But I'd get out there and I'd put that freaking hood on, and it was way too big. And in the winter, it blew cold air. And in the summer, it blew hot air because the freaking temperature control on it was broke. And I freaking put on that damn extra, extra large freaking denim shirt. And I'd get out there and put all my weight on that hose, 100 PSI coming out, freaking Black Beauty sand, and it would slide up those sleeves and get up under my skin. Ugh. And for about 15 years, I was digging Black Beauty sand out of my skin.
Yeah.
We get done with the day. The Johnny, I remember his name. Like, he was like this freaking hardcore dude that used to work on the rigs offshore. And I'd get done sandblasting. He's like, "You ain't done yet. I need you to go prime this and prime that and get it ready for painting tomorrow." All right, fine. It's 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm out there freaking in the middle of the night trying to prime a freaking boom or a beam or whatever. And I'm out there busting my ass. I come back in, my face is covered in primer. He throws me a bottle of MEK, methyl ethyl ketone. "Wash your face with this." All right, fine. I find out 10 years later, that shit's cancerous. Holy shit. You're like, I don't, like, this old dude just told me to do it. So I just did it. And so, yeah, like it, those, but those experiences, they kind of, they drill this kind of like harder layer into you that it's like, you can't be mentally broken. You know, when people are like, "Well, you had a tough life." I was talking to Rachel Nelson about this the other day. When people are like, "You have had a tough life." And I'm like, "I just had a life." Like, life is neutral, man. Things are just hard sometimes. And that's just the way it goes.
Doesn't know water's wet.
Right. Yeah. It just is what it is. Like, I don't look at it as a hard life or a soft life or an easy life or whatever. It just is what it is. I just had to do what I had to do. It made me prepared for things that some people aren't prepared for. But don't be afraid to engage in those types of scenarios that are difficult to your mental psyche, because those are the things that make you prepared for a future, you know, and prepared to take on the future and look ahead and do the hard things whenever the hard things need to be done.
Yeah, man. Like, just talking about sandblasting. There's a young kid that works at my place now, and every time that we need anything sandblasted, everybody goes to him. But he's like the maintenance guy, I guess. He's the one that's supposed to do it. And every time he like complains, like, "When am I going to be a welder?" And it's like, dude, Like, you're like 20. Shut up.
Dude, eat 2 ounces of shrooms, man. The freaking sparks look amazing.
But I don't know. I don't know. I never had a problem. Like, even when I got out of the military and, you know, I was sometimes starting jobs and they're like, my boss would be younger than me. It's just how it is. And, you know, whatever, I have to earn my keep here. So show them, like, all right, you tell me to do that, I'm not going to like bitch and moan about it. Like,
one of my bosses was 6 years old when I started driving truck.
Wow. Yeah.
We were talking about it the other day. We were just laughing. That's just how it happened. Like, it's just funny, you know?
Yeah, that's what was weird toward the end of my time in the military, is I was literally older than like my officers that were in charge of me. And I was like, wow, this is very weird. Like, you don't know anything and you're like in charge of my little section here. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I occasionally have to think about this every here and there too. What the hell? My one advisor is 22. So when I first started working on cars, I think he was like 8 years old. And then the other kid I was telling you guys about earlier, who's 19 and just started working, he's learning pretty damn good. I think he was like six or seven when I started working on cars. And I'm just like, my God, like, I remember being the young guy, even in like my band.
Yeah.
I remember we used to joke about me being the baby. And then now it's like, no, I'm fucking getting old. I joined a Common Crown fucking 6 years ago. And, you know, I was 24, Shep was 30, and then Steve would have been 50. And then I think Matt and Jen were both like maybe early 40s. So now, you know, we're all fucking getting old. I'm like, man, it's so weird for me because now I'm like, I'm one of those older guys. I remember when I started working at Nick's and I was 18 or 19. And yeah, some of the guys there were like 30 years old. Now, like, sometimes I sit there and think about it. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm like in their position now where, you know, I've been at this shop for a few years and now there's kids coming in who are learning. And now I kind of have to be responsible for hopefully making them into a better tech than they were before they even showed up.
Well, I have a subject that we haven't covered and I think it's kind of funny.
Okay. Yeah. So, go ahead.
Did y'all, well, you don't watch UFC, Kyle. Did you watch the fights last night, Typo?
No, but I kind of keep up with them. I didn't watch them though.
Oh, it was great. Dude, there was like 8 of 13 ended it with a finish.
Wow.
That's awesome. it was a great night. It was fucking awesome. So Donald Trump shows up last night and he walks in, the crowd's going crazy. I mean, despite what the media will tell you, they'll tell you everybody hates Donald Trump, but apparently everybody that watches UFC loves him. So the crowd's going nuts.
I think it's been a consistent theme.
He shakes Dave Portnoy's hand. He walks around. RFK Jr. is there with his wife. Is it Maria Shriver? Is that correct? His wife's name?
I don't know which one.
She's a former actress, RFK's wife. So he walks up to RFK, dude. It was so funny. He shook RFK's hand, gave him a little bro hug, said something to him, then turned and looked at RFK's wife as RFK's wife stuck out her hand to shake his hand and just turned and walked away from her. It was one of the funniest things I've seen in my life. And I was like, what does Donald Trump have against RFK Jr.'s wife?
Do you think he just didn't see it?
No, he saw it. He looked directly at her. Do you want me to send you the video, Kyle?
Yeah, if you could send me the video, I was about to look it up.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. I saw the lights flashing over there by you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sent it to one of my boys is a big UFC fan. So he and I were talking back and forth and I had sent it to him earlier. So it's right here. I'm going to text it to you. But it was really funny. It's about a 3-minute video, him walking in, but it was like just, I showed Beatrix this video earlier and we were dying laughing just because of how obvious it was he saw her. And then she makes this like reaction, like, what do I do? It was really funny.
I don't know. That's weird. I mean, even with people I would think he doesn't like very well, he would still be polite. Like,
well, I mean, like Bill Maher just did that whole monologue about going to the White House.
Yeah. And he, you know, he, I've always heard this, that like in the media, it'll be very like sometimes rude or kind of outgoing about someone, but behind closed doors, he's never like that to their face. What I've heard, but I don't know.
Yeah. Because he's playing a game. As Beatrix and I were talking about this.
I don't know if we play audio, it might give me a strike.
Yeah, well, yeah. He's playing American Badass by Kid Rock, so it might.
Okay, yeah, that sounds about right then. Okay, so, yeah, they're all watching, waving the flag.
Oh, there's his granddaughter.
Yeah, his granddaughter.
That's behind him.
And his grandson. Yeah.
Okay.
His granddaughter's supposed to be one.
Oh, that's Dave. Okay, that's Dave.
That's Dave Portnoy right there. He'll be coming up to RFK Jr. in a second.
Aiden Ross.
I don't know who that is.
He's a big streamer.
So you watch right here.
Whoa.
Just completely ignored her.
Then he goes and then he gives John Anik a bro hug and he goes and talks to Joe Rogan.
Hold on. Look at that. Look, it looks right up. Eye contact.
Dude, he looked away from her.
Literally, hold on. Let me see.
He made eye contact and then was like, fuck you, bitch.
Hold on, wait for it. Yep, see right there.
Whoa.
See right there.
That's awkward.
And then she does this motion after he walks away, like, what am I supposed to do with my hand now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, see that. Okay, see that. Then she goes for the granddaughter.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's John Anik. He's a Joe Rogan. Daniel Cormier.
Yeah.
He loves Rogan. He hugged him like 3 times.
Yeah. Saw his hand on him. Yeah. Joe, you're lovely. You're the greatest UFC commentator I've ever heard.
And I know UFC fighters better than you. Oh, no, believe me. You believe me.
I just thought that was so funny. I was like, what did RFK Jr.'s wife do to Donald Trump?
Oh, my God.
You can't even publicly shake your hand. That's
yeah.
Dude, he made eye contact and then turned from her like, fuck you, bitch.
Let's see. Here I am doing tabloid journalism. Maria Shriver, First Lady of California. No, that's not her. RFK Jr.'s wife. Trump finally greets RFK's wife, Cheryl Hines, after snubbing her.
Cheryl Hines.
UFC 13. What we know. Okay. There's all these articles about it. You know, I've said this before, but you have to. Oh, that's right. He had fucking Ted Cruz with him. Why would you bring Ted Cruz with you?
Almost the whole cabinet was there. Tulsi was there. Marco Rubio was there. There was a bunch of people there.
Yeah, if somebody punched Marco Rubio in the throat, that would be that'd be cool. He
was sitting next to Tulsi Gabbard, so he had good security.
Yeah, that's pretty good. No, I can't seem to find anything on it. Yeah, Hindustan Times. That's the website I'm on. Jesus Christ.
Wow. That doesn't sound safe.
No, it doesn't.
You're going to have a virus.
Yeah, probably. Newsweek. Let's see. Did Trump snub RFK Jr.'s wife, Cheryl Hines, at UFC 314? The moment was captured by ESPN's live coverage showing Trump greeting Kennedy with a warm handshake while seemingly bypassing Hines completely, creating an awkward moment that quickly gained traction on social media. Why it matters. Kennedy's publicly acknowledged that his wife has helped describe a lifelong. This makes sense. Kennedy has publicly acknowledged that his wife, a self-described, get the fuck out of here. A self-described lifelong Democrat was uncomfortable with his decision to support Trump after suspending his own independent campaign. What to know? Trump was attending UFC at the Kasaya Center with an entourage that included his granddaughter, upon arrival, Trump shook hands with Kennedy, who's already seated the food show and was appearing to completely ignore Hines, leaving the actress visibly embarrassed as she tried to brush off the incident. yeah, it's not really saying anything. Okay, it's probably, he's like, you didn't vote for me, the greatest president in the world. I got your husband a job in my cabinet, and you still didn't like me, so sorry, you're not getting an handshake.
I just saw that, and I was like, dude, that was so freaking obvious. It was so funny. It was such a Trump thing to do, too. The way he did it, he made eye contact and made sure she knew, like, I'm not shaking your hand.
Dude, did you see someone set your governor's mansion on fire?
Okay, so, yeah, what the hell? Okay, let me see what the hell. Governor Shapiro. Okay, I do have to know what kind of happened here. Okay, police... Go to Fox News. 42. Okay, here we go. 42 minutes ago from the Washington Post, suspect in custody. Oh my God. I am so sick of this fucking bullshit of trying to fucking throw an ad in my face every single time. I just want to read a motherfucking article. Suspect arrested after arson at Pennsylvania governor's house forced Shapiro and family to evacuate. Jesus.
Oh, they arrested somebody. I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, this is as of 3 hours ago. A 30-year-old man has been arrested in connection with an arson at the Pennsylvania governor's house as the governor and his family slept inside. Harrisburg Bureau of Fire responded to the fire around 2 a.m., extinguished it, but the body or the building was left with a significant amount of damage, according to the state police.
30-year-old man. You know, they arrested a guy in Vegas a while, was it two, three weeks ago for vandalizing, terrorizing a terrorist, a Tesla dealership. Mm-hmm. So he had gone in and he had shot out the cameras on the outside of the building. And then he was going up to the Teslas and he was shooting out their windows and then throwing Molotov cocktails. Mm-hmm. And he damaged like five of their cars, totaled like three of them, I want to say. Mm-hmm. So they arrested him. Right. And they charged him with seven felonies and they're like a 36-year-old man. And I was like, what 36-year-old man has time to be doing that?
Yeah.
You know, like this makes no sense to me whatsoever. What are these aren't men. What are these are like hermaphrodites. I don't know what they are.
Well, they're androgynous. Yeah, I'm surprised they did make a mention of this in the article. Photos of the aftermath show a portion of the building devastated by the fire with furniture destroyed and the floor covered in ash. Images also show the wall and ceiling blackened and feature some remnant of the Passover dinner the governor hosted Saturday night, like a Passover crafts sign. I'm surprised they're not trying to talk about the anti-Semitism yet.
Well, they were. Yeah. They were. The report I saw, they were saying, we're not sure if this is political or religious. So they're keeping the door open.
Yeah. I mean, if your governor, and he did, he signed bombs that went and were used in Ukraine.
Yeah.
He hasn't quite gone as far as signing the bombs that Israel's using. That Nikki Haley and David Dreiman from Disturbed did that, but I'm surprised Josh Shapiro hasn't done that yet. And of course, I'll never forget all the stupid fucking Con Inc types saying that the only reason why Kamala Harris didn't choose Josh Shapiro is because the left really hates Jews, even though Kamala Harris's husband is Jewish.
Yeah, but that's okay because he beats women, so it's okay.
Well, I mean, if you were married to Kamala.
No, he didn't beat Kamala. He beats his other girlfriends. Yeah, there's all kinds of accusations over there.
Okay, but come on, man. Like, once again, if you had to tolerate day in, day out, I want to be the bitch too, right? I'm not saying violence is right.
Dude's got to beat women past because he's married to that crazy slut.
Yeah, dude. I'm just saying, if you had all sorts of social media saying that, like, yeah, dude, your wife basically sucked dick to the top, and you had to deal with that cackle every night, I'd be like, yeah, you know what? I think Chris Brown may have had a point.
Chris Brown did nothing wrong. Is this
Chris Brown did nothing wrong. Yeah, in case you got to Ray Rice a bitch into an elevator.
Yeah, no, apparently he had all kinds of scandals following him that Kamala didn't know about, and she was finding out about in real time as they came out while she was running for president. So I don't know if that marriage is going to last very much longer.
Yeah, like, I don't know.
Like he impregnated his nanny. And apparently he had, I don't know how he managed this, but he caused a miscarriage from his nanny Not sure how that goes. He was dating some attorney at one point in time. She flew, I think it was to Paris, to meet him for a red carpet event. And he like choked her in line, in public. Like it was like, yeah, he had all kinds of crazy shit coming out. And Kamala's finding out about all of it in real time. It was pretty wild.
Dude, they're always freaks. Dude, I always feel like that was like a fake marriage, him and Kamala Harris getting together. I feel like it wasn't like just a power move, you know? Like, yeah. I don't really know what for. His daughter is a weirdo. She was going on. Like, she's like a big lefty. I think she's like,
okay,
I don't know.
Isn't she a he now?
I think it's something like that. Yeah.
I don't know why you guys talking about this made me think of this. Did you guys ever see this video? Hold on. Now wait for it. She hit him. Wait for it.
You're going to hell.
Oh my god.
Oh. Oh shit.
Oh man. Right after that, I remember he says, "She want to talk to me like a man, I'm going to treat her like a man."
Yeah. You going to hell now.
Yeah, he said
that was like a slow motion uppercut too.
Yeah, man. He said right before, "I'm going to jail now."
Oh, is that what he was saying? I thought he said, "You're going to hell."
Oh, okay. Well, all them said, "You're going to jail." Then he said, "I'm going to jail."
Yeah, that was wild. He put everything he had in that.
Yeah, she started smacking him, and you know what's a bus driver to do? Apparently, in Cleveland, you know, you gotta do what you gotta do.
That's why Drew Carey loved Cleveland so much.
All right. Well, what do you say we wrap this one up?
Happy 400th, man! I hope it lived up to your expectations.
Nah, man, I figured it'd be chill, and I'm glad Typo was able to stop long. I sent it out to a few other people, but it was kind of last minute on my part to send it out to them. So, Typo, I'm glad you could hop on. Oh, yeah, I forgot. I think I showed everybody else this, but yeah, the guy who's recording, who recorded and records the Common Crown stuff, this is Water from Antarctica.
Cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it is pretty fucking cool. So, anyways, Tommy, go ahead. Where can everybody find you? What do you got going on?
Year Zero, libertarianinstitute.org/year-0/, or my Substack, TommySalmons.com. You can see how my name is spelled right there under my beautiful face. I've been doing a lot of looking into the tariffs and interviewing people about the tariffs, and hopefully I get a Trump supporter on very soon to break down their perspective on the tariffs. If I do, it's going to be huge. Y'all will love it. It's going to be an awesome conversation. So, yeah, tune in. I'll be there.
Cool. Typo.
Biting the bullet. Me and Luke do a podcast usually every week, but sometimes not. But it's on all the podcatchers. Go check it out there. And then 5 till midnight with Kyle here. We'll be doing it tomorrow. We do it every Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern time. Last week, actually, you guys go check out that episode because that one was really cool. It was really mainly about the guest. He talked like 90% of it, but it was just really cool. It was all about the Malaysian flight that disappeared and his theory on what happened to it. So go check that out, but we'll have a new one out tomorrow.
Yeah, make sure you go check out both these guys' shows and obviously our show 5 till midnight. That's always a blast where you just kind of have fun for about an hour, talk shit about current topics. We have an idea for what we're going to talk about tomorrow, but Yeah, I think that's about it. This week I'll be having on Eric Jackman, or no, I'm sorry, not Eric, Mike Jackman. We're going to talk about JFK. And I know I haven't watched the movie yet, but we're going to be talking about JFK.
As soon as you do, you're coming on my show and we're talking about it.
Yes. Yes, I know. I feel bad that I haven't watched it quite yet.
No, don't worry about it.
But
it's hard. Yeah, it's hard to find 3.5 hours to sit down and watch a movie.
So yeah, we're going to talk about JFK and probably like some horror movies, Predator and Alien and stuff like that, because over the last year I've become obsessed with Alien and Predator. And yeah, I think that's about it. Oh, and obviously go check out Jack Napier's channel. I think he hosted Post Zero, and also Rule Zero on our buddy Nuke's channel. So I'll be back on Rule Zero and Post Zero this weekend. So
all the zero shows.
Yeah, I do all the zero shows. Year Zero, Rule Zero, Post Zero. So anyways, guys, thank you so much for watching. And yeah, hopefully you guys have enjoyed the journey that I've been on for all these 400 episodes, because it's been a hell of a ride. So yeah. Oh, and everybody, make sure you go to tigerfitness.com. I didn't even plug any of my stuff. This is a shirt I literally just got. This is one of my wife's maternity shirts, but they also fit me. So they're just men's large shirts, but since my wife's getting pregnant and huge and stuff, I'm you know, once she's done being pregnant and stuff, these are all going to be my shirts. So, but yeah, Tiger Fitness, use code Kyle at checkout. It'll not only get me a little bit of cash in my pocket, but also get you guys a little bit of a discount for.
I thought that was a little black stripe on the side. Now I'm aware that it's a breastfeeding slot.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.